couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Dog, Uncharted, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Space Force Season 2, and Severance. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring They Live in the Gray on Shudder. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Ivan Reitman died last week. It wasn't announced by his people until the beginning of this past week, but he had actually passed away on February 12th, which was during the weekend. And the thing is, you know, Ivan Reitman was such a monumental director and producer. I mean, he was a filmmaker. And some of them arguably weren't great movies per se. I mean, Father's Day was a bit of a flop, and Evolution wasn't great. I mean, his later films, Evolution, My Super Ex-Girlfriend, No Strings Attached, those were not his strongest pieces. But when you look at his run in the late 70s and early 80s, which started with Meatballs, and then it went to Stripes, and then Ghostbusters, skip a bit with Legal Eagles, because even though that was a decent film, it wasn't as big as like Ghostbusters. But then he did Twins and Ghostbusters 2 and Kindergarten Cop and Dave and Junior. I mean, that 15-year run was kind of amazing. You don't see a whole lot of careers like that. And yeah, he slowed down. This is sort of like Francis Ford Coppola later in his career. He had some lesser known films, but I mean, you look at the heyday of his movies. I mean, Ghostbusters has been such a big movie, and they've, you know, tried to redo it, and they did a pretty good job with Ghostbusters Afterlife. And it was nice that Ivan Reitman was around for this reboot of Ghostbusters and seeing it actually be a bit more of a success than the one in 2016. So yeah, he was definitely somebody who really had an impact on the movies I watched as a child. So he will be definitely missed. The next piece of news I wanted to talk about is, it's less of a piece of news and more of a reaction. And I got this a lot last week when I was doing some calls and doing some on-air spots, because they had the Oscar nominations last week. And we talked about those, so I'm not ready to talk any more necessarily about this particular Oscar nomination. But I'm starting to hear the same thing, and you get this all the time on radio whenever I do call-ins and I talk to people in just all over the country. You hear the same things over and over again, and one of the things I hear is, oh, nobody cares about the Oscars. They're the least watched show ever. Okay, I'll give you that. But, and I said this to a host, because his big suggestion was, they need to get somebody like a Dave Chappelle in there to do something outrageous. And I'm like, I don't know if putting a transphobic comedian like Dave Chappelle into the mix is actually going to make it more of a watchable ceremony. I think it's just going to polarize it even more. I've always said that the problem is the Oscar ceremony is a dinosaur. And you have to divorce the concepts of the Oscars as awards and a 3.5 to 4 hour Oscar ceremony that was relevant back in 1975. You got to realize, back in the 70s and 80s and even early into the 90s, you didn't have a whole lot of options. I mean, yeah, by the time you got the 80s, you had VCRs. And by the time you got into the 90s, you were just starting to get into the internet. But you did not have the options we do now. I mean, even cable TV, which was out back, you know, 20, 30 years ago, it's very different now. I mean, look at all the things that are competing for our attention. Not only do you have the broadcast TV, which is where this stuff airs, you got cable TV, then you got premium cable, then you got streaming, then you've got the internet, then you've got stuff like YouTube and TikTok with quote-unquote everyday users developing content. I mean, my kids alone, they don't watch regular streaming all that much. They watch YouTube content. So maybe in the era of short TikTok sound bites, we've lost the interest or desire to sit down and watch a 3 or 4 hour ceremony, especially something as nasal gazing as the Oscars is. I mean, it's just nothing but them saying how great they were. And it doesn't matter what the movies are. And to that point, you know, people say, well, they're not popular enough movies. Look at all these movies that nobody's seen in the top 10 categories. Well, you know, look, here's the thing. Oscars have never, ever, ever been about the most popular movie. They really haven't. Oh, yeah, you can find popular movies that did well in one, you know, stuff like Gladiator or Braveheart or Titanic in the 90s. You had a little bit of a bump into the popularity stuff. But really, honestly, how many people out there were going and seeing the Last Emperor when it won? Not very many. It's also just an ignorance people have of how this stuff is done. You don't have a group of like 12 people sitting there planning, okay, let's put these into the categories and we're going to nominate these and the heck with Spider-Man because that was garbage. It's probably done by a ballot system, and it's just what the ballots are or what the ballots are. You got to realize that that's the way ballot systems work. If we haven't learned that in the last couple of years, when it comes to elections, that's how things work when you vote. And so the Oscars have never been about what's the most popular. If it was, you have the thing called the box office, which gives you the most popular movie. And if the Oscars were about the most popular movie and about the movie that made the most box office, then Transformers 2 would have won back in 2008. And Venom would have been nominated in the top 10. And that thing's a lousy movie. So, look, I get that the Oscars aren't as relevant. And I think at this point, because of the high profile of so many other critics' awards and so many other award shows, that it dilutes the specialness of the Oscars. And by the time the Oscars is coming out in March, everybody's seen it and thought about it and dealt with the movies already, and they're ready to move on. So I think if they're going to change anything, the Oscars should appear earlier in the run. They probably should show up sometime in January, and they should be maybe a 90-minute ceremony and put somebody like Ricky Gervais in there with an unapproved script, and you'll get people to watch. But you're not going to get people to watch 3 hours of Hollywood telling itself how great it is. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Let's take a look at the new spot for Jurassic World Dominion, which is coming to theaters on June 10th.
We can't keep her here forever.
If they find her, we're never going to see her again. We got to protect her. That's our job.
Humans and dinosaurs can't coexist.
We created an ecological disaster.
Ally Sattler.
Alan Grant.
You didn't come out all this way just to catch up now, did you?
You coming or what?
What I find so funny about the Jurassic World movies is the first one kind of redid Jurassic Park with the people getting caught in the park and the rich guy running the whole thing, having a problem, and the scientist running away with the eggs. And then they just went more and more like the previous movies. Fallen Kingdom was very much a retread of Jurassic Park Lost World. And on top of it, it also brought back Ian Malcolm. It was starting to bring back these characters. And now this one, we've got Laura Dern and Sam Neill showing up again. And they're doubling down on trying to hit all those nostalgia buttons so that they can get that money that they had with that first movie that kind of came out of nowhere with Jurassic World, and they want this one to at least match it and not be a flop. But who knows? We'll see what happens. I don't know. It looks like it's good action. I just hope that it delivers and it's not a garbage story like the last movie was. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Nope, which comes to theaters on July 22nd.
Was a bad miracle. They got word for that.
This is Jordan Peele's latest movie. We don't get much. You just know that there's something crazy and dangerous coming from above, and it's attacking this ranch out in the middle of California somewhere. And, you know, look, I have faith in Jordan Peele. I think his stuff is fantastic, and I think he's got a real bead on what it means to be a horror movie maker in this day and age. So I'm very much looking forward to this one. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Uncharted and Space Force Season 2. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump right into the movie reviews and talk about Uncharted, one that I haven't seen. Tom Holland stars as a treasure hunter who is roped into a swashbuckling adventure.
Everything in here. Why the map?
It's the biggest treasure that's never been found.
5 billion, easy.
But it's just a story.
I beg to differ.
500 years ago, my family found the world's biggest fortune, then was betrayed.
Oh, this is gonna suck!
Your brother believed that there was a final piece.
Well, you know my brother, Sam?
You have no idea who you partnered with.
As you can tell from that blurb, I didn't know much about this movie. They had a screening of this in Cleveland, which is like 2.5 hours away, and I was like, I could not fit it in my schedule. So I didn't bother to go up. I don't know. I've not heard great things about this. Apparently, this is based on a video game. See, I don't know anything about this movie, and it didn't interest me enough. And it was one of those movies that it wasn't even on my radar until a couple weeks ago when I started seeing ads for it on Facebook. So I don't think that there's a great awareness of this movie. And I think the studio's hoping that Tom Holland's going to bring some good juju from his Spider-Man movie, but I don't think people are seeing movies because of Tom Holland. It's rare, and it happens now and then. I'm like, Will Smith, I think, can actually draw people out to see a movie, less and less recently because he hasn't been in that many. You know, he had kind of his big run there about 10 years ago, but there's really no major star that their mere presence in a movie is bringing people out to see him. It's either a movie that they're very highly associated with, like a rom-com or something like that. You know, used to be if you saw like Reese Witherspoon or Sandra Bullock or Julia Roberts in a rom-com, it would drag people to see the movie, at least who were interested in rom-coms. Obviously, that didn't happen last week with Jennifer Lopez in Marry Me, but there you go. I don't know. Uncharted, it looks like it might be fun in a Jungle Cruise sort of way. I'm a bit nervous that it's based on a video game because generally video games, and I've said this before, video games are premise-based. They're not plot-based. And they have these things that lead into these very open-ended scenarios where you have a very sort of mundane task to do, but it's more the fun of the adventure of getting to that task. But it's very different to apply that to a story, which it doesn't work in most conventional movies. That's why it's so hard to adapt video games into movies. So that's the thing I think is going to hobble this movie, is if it's trying to play too much like the game, which is a completely different medium than a movie, even though they kind of look the same. So I don't know. I'm going to give Uncharted a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it for me here in Columbus. So tread cautiously on this one.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next thing for review, which is Space Force Season 2. Steve Carell returns in the second season of his workplace comedy about budget cuts and restructuring at the new military Space Force branch.
I would like to hear a Space Force spirit on three. One, two, three.
Space Force spirit.
You will have 5 months to prove yourself, or POTUS will install alternative command.
Oh. Space Force isn't going anywhere.
We are back in the game.
Oh, my God.
What's going on with us?
Yeah. I'm going to blow this interview.
No, you won't.
What have you done for you?
Showtime, baby.
What's interesting about Space Force is I have a feeling it got greenlit as a joke, because not a whole lot of people, especially in the mainstream, took President Trump's formation of the Space Force very seriously. And look, I'm not a huge fan of militarizing space, but I think there's a certain need for, let's just call them, upper atmosphere and out of the atmosphere national protection. I look at what the purpose of a Space Force would be is very similar to the Coast Guard, as opposed to the Navy, which fights battles on the land, and it's more the Coast Guard protects the coast. And a Space Force should protect our interests from above the atmosphere, so to speak. But when this military branch was announced, it kind of got a lot of jokes in the mainstream media. And I have a feeling that Greg Daniels and Steve Carell just sort of pitched this as a joke, and Netflix bit. And so then they had to make a series out of it. And the first season was okay. It got very mixed reviews from people. And I think part of it was it didn't just make fun of Donald Trump throughout the whole thing. Look, I'm not against making fun of any politician, certainly not Donald Trump. Make fun of him all you want. That's what art is for. That's what popular culture is for. But that would have burned itself out very quickly. So then they decided, okay, well, let's make this movie about something. And so it was about them trying to get this Space Force thing off the ground and dealing with the bureaucracy of the government and everything like that. And they kind of took the presidential and partisan politics out of it. And I thought it had gotten canceled. I didn't think it got picked up for a second season until suddenly this trailer dropped, or this announcement, actually, rather, that Netflix was going to drop season two. And so I was very curious to see it. And you can tell that something happened between the first and second season, because the first season's very much about them trying to get their projects off the ground and people's sniping and interactions with each other. And there's a lot of stuff going on in the workplace that deals with their work, because people can tend to be very interested in space stuff. I mean, we all love The Martian, and, you know, we loved Apollo 13, those kind of things, which kind of get into the nuts and bolts of the stuff. And then there were sort of these side stories of people in their daily life, but they really focused on the space stuff. This season, they don't. And I think part of it is they tip their hat, because they have a whole subplot in this season where their budget's been cut. And I have a feeling that the TV series, the budget got cut. I have a feeling they got renewed for a second season the same way Steve Carell is kept in charge of the Space Force. With saying, you're going to have to, you know, earn your keep. You're going to have to justify yourself. And so they retooled this to make it more about the interaction of the people in the office. You know, so to speak, you compare it to The Office, which Greg Daniels and Steve Carell obviously were involved in. In The Office, you weren't making jokes about selling paper. Paper was just the vehicle to get people in their office to do stuff. It didn't matter whether they were selling paper or shoes or plastics or fishing wire or tissues. It doesn't matter what they were selling. You just needed them in the workplace to get that workplace comedy. And that's essentially what they're trying to do with Space Force Season 2. And to a degree, it works. It's clearly been retooled, even though they got pretty much the same cast. And Steve Carell seems to fit better in this one, as they're sort of aiming him more closer to Michael Scott. They directed him away from that. They kind of made him a little more of the grumpy, conservative-minded general. And in this one, they're kind of making him a little more inept but good at what he does, which is a very Michael Scott sort of thing to do from The Office. John Malkovich is sidelined a bit, which is kind of a shame, because he was the best part in season one. I really enjoyed Malkovich in the first season, but I just felt that he comes across as kind of soft in this one. They do develop some of the characters, like Ben Schwartz's character is developed a little bit well, and I think they do a good job developing his character. Jimmy O. Yang has a little bit more development with his character, especially with his relationship with Tawny Newsom's character. But really, it is a little bit halting to watch this series and there not being much space stuff going on. They could be doing anything. They could be a weather station. So they did strip out the space part of Space Force, and they're trying to work it more as a workplace comedy. It's not quite there yet. Maybe a season three. I don't know if it's got the legs to make it there, though. Because, like I said, I know that there was a little bit of a waning interest in the first season. So we'll see what happens. I'm rooting for another season because I found it mildly funny. So I'm going to have to say that Space Force Season 2 kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Dog and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Who let the dogs out?
And welcome back to Feckeyes at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Dog. Channing Tatum directs himself in this road dramedy about an injured Army Ranger who takes a fellow soldier's unruly dog across the country for his funeral.
I need to get back in the game, sir.
You want to get back in the game? Prove it. Sergeant Rodriguez was a legend.
Family funeral Sunday outside of Nogales.
They want his dog at the funeral. You do this, and you're back in the game. She won't work with anyone. One minute she's good, the next minute she's sending three guys to the ER.
What's up, dog?
And you're gonna go on a little road trip.
Whatever happened to you, dog?
She used to be a legend.
Go, go, go! Hey, dog!
You don't do anything else psychotic on this trip?
Maybe we can have some fun.
Is that a deal, Shake?
Generally, whenever you see a movie that's about the military, It's very hard to make one of those movies now without going overly jingoistic or overly critical of them. It seems that for the last 20 years, anytime there's been a military movie, it's either one of these movies that's showing everybody who is in combat and in the military is an absolute head case who can barely even put their shoes on in the morning after getting home, all the way down to it being overly jingoistic and rah-rah, American can do no wrong, the soldiers can do no wrong, and we hold, you can never mess up and there's never any consequence for anything bad that happens. And neither's true. I mean, thank God for the military, and they're great at what they do, but there are some things that happen that are unpleasant that need to be addressed. You know, I think that the PTSD stuff needs to be handled a little bit better, especially in normal life. And I think that a lot of focus needs to be on veterans affairs and that sort of stuff. But you know, people are people. And so you can sometimes not have a balanced movie when it comes to something dealing with the military. Also, something like this, especially one of these dog films, they tend to be leaning very heavily into the faith-based crowd. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that, and I've said this before, and I stand by it, faith-based movies tend to be made at a lower standard. They're overly cheesy. They oftentimes have really terrible acting in them, and they have some corny writing and sort of things. And I remember I saw that when there was that movie Risen with Joseph Fiennes as a Roman centurion trying to track down Jesus's body. I thought they did a great job with that thing, not falling into the corny traps you do in faith-based movies. So it didn't turn out like some cheesy Hallmark movie or something like that. And so those were my worries about Dog, because I was afraid it was going to go down that road or one of those roads. And surprisingly, it doesn't. And I think that's because it's not about the military and it's not about faith, although they play roles in the movie. You can't completely unweave those from this guy's life, but it's not trying to give a message about the military. It's just a guy trying to do the right thing for this dog who had worked with this fellow soldier who had passed away. It's also not like overly corny as a dog movie. Like some of those Bruce W. Campbell or whoever wrote the books like A Dog's Journey, those things tend to get really goofy and corny at times. I mean, they're sweet and they're fun and they're heartwarming, but they do kind of get a little bit, you know, almost Disney Channel level of cheesiness. This one doesn't. I think it tells an authentic story and it brings up some things and it doesn't hit you over the head with it. Now, you can walk away from this and take no message from it, but you can also walk away from this and say, you know, we do need to address the trauma that not just the soldiers go through, but the working dogs go through. I mean, there's a lot of dogs that are put into service who are not effectively groomed to leave such service. They can have aggression issues. They can have anxiety issues because they're emotional beings. These animals will react like any emotional being. Well, they'll react like a human to being traumatized day in and day out. So I think a lot of this is on Channing Tatum's shoulders because I think he does a good job making it work and making it a charming little film. And it is a movie quite literally about a guy and his dog. I mean, that's really what it is. And it's not his dog. He learns about this dog and he learns to interact with this dog and he messes up sometimes and he's not the best at what he does. And I think there's an honesty there. You know, it doesn't get overbearing one way or the other. And even though there's some heavy consequences to stuff going on in this movie, but it doesn't bang you over the head with it so much. I was pleasantly charmed by this movie. I think it does what it needs to do. It's just enough about the military that, you know, it embraces that, but it doesn't get overly jingoistic. It's about faith and family, but it doesn't turn preachy. It's about dogs, but it doesn't get overly corny and goofy and silly. So yeah, this is a sweet little movie. It's surprising at how much I like this movie. So I'm going to have to say that Dog rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next film, which is The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. A group of millennial influencers plan to revitalize a worn-out Texas town until they awaken the rage of one of the town's residents, a little guy called Leatherface.
So Harlow is a ghost town.
I don't want to live here. This is a chance for people to start fresh somewhere. Somewhere safe. Hey, guys. You should see this.
What are you doing in our house? You really shouldn't be here.
50 years I've been waiting for this night.
just to see him again.
Who?
Leatherface.
What's funny with these masked killer movies, there's a handful of them that have really risen to the top of horror movie history. I mean, you're talking like Jason, you've got Michael Myers, you've got Freddy Krueger, and then you've got Leatherface. But what's funny is Friday the 13th, Halloween, and Nightmare on Elm Street all kind of exist in their own realm. This is a very different structure of a story. I mean, yes, in the original Texas Chainsaw, you had a bunch of teenagers or early 20s stumbling somewhere they shouldn't have and getting into some horrible, horrible problems. But it's not been the morality play that some of the later slasher movies became. And the Texas Chainsaw movies have kind of lived a life outside their own. Even when you look at their sequels, like Tobe Hooper did Texas Chainsaw 2, which I don't think's that good. And Texas Chainsaw 3 was just a rehash of Texas Chainsaw 1. Texas Chainsaw 4 makes no sense whatsoever, even though it's got arguably the best cast with Renee Zellweger and Matthew McConaughey. And then they started doing sort of the remake reboots. You know, they did the remake Texas Chainsaw back in 2003, and they did a New Beginning, I think, later, which was okay. And some of those are actually kind of clever. Texas Chainsaw 3D, I gotta say, I was impressed with that one. I thought it was funny, irreverent. It was self-referential, and it also kind of broke new ground with the series. So it has a very different progeny than Halloween, Friday the 13th, and Nightmare on Elm Street movies. And this one, both is exactly what it needs to be and falls into a whole new set of traps at the same time. It does get a little bit overly aware of itself, kind of making fun of millennials. I mean, it leans into that millennial versus boomer argument, and that's a little bit tired. And, you know, it does put the influencers and the social media people and the people who are always on their phones. There's like a line where somebody has a camera to Leatherface and is like, you're going to get canceled if you do anything. I mean, it makes stupid jokes and comments about that. But it also is a bona fide, grisly, gory, and very, very violent slasher movie. So, I mean, if that's what you want to see, you're going to get it. Although I will say this, it takes over half the movie for a chainsaw to even get started, which is a little disappointing. But once the saw starts running, you get your full force of the chainsaw, and Leatherface goes on his massacre, which he doesn't really do in some of the other movies. This is bona fide massacre. And I think that there's a part of this that's paying homage to the original reason that Tobe Hooper came up with the idea of Texas Chainsaw. I think he was waiting in line at a hardware store, and it was a big, huge line. And he looks up there, and there's a big chainsaw, and he goes, well, that would get me through the line quick. And that's fine. I mean, it's nihilistic and horrible and violent, but, you know, it delivers those goods. It also has this bit where it takes the original character. I mean, it's not the same actress because she passed away recently, but the original and final girl from the first Texas Chainsaw, they bring her back, like what they do with Jamie Lee Curtis, only they don't do it as effectively in this movie. It's kind of almost there as a gimmick. You know, it's, there's parts of it that I liked, and then there are parts of it that I did kind of go, eh, really? So it's kind of a mixed bag. But you know what I got to say, for like the 10th movie in a series, a mixed bag is one of the best things you're going to end up getting. You know, it's not going to be for everybody, but I have to say the Texas Chainsaw Massacre kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Severance and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring They Live in the Gray.
Reminds me of the one I love deep in the heart of Texas.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up with the reviews and talk about Severance. In this workplace thriller, employees at a major corporation undergo a procedure to separate their work memories from the rest of themselves.
I give consent to sever my memories between my work life and my personal life.
Do I know you?
My name is Petey. I'm from work. Nothing is what they say. I used to think it would take a monster to put someone in a place like that office. Especially if the person was himself.
This is available on Apple TV Plus. It's dropped, I believe, its first two episodes this week, and it's going to drop a new one every week going into April. And it has a bunch of people involved in it that are best known for comedies. Like, Ben Stiller directs it and writes a bunch of the episodes. And Adam Scott stars in it. I mean, those are two names that you generally associate with comedy, but it's not a comedic show. It's a very serious speculative fiction. And, you know, there's science fiction, which is spaceships and adventures and space jockeys and laser blasts, you know, Robbie the Robot, that kind of stuff. Hard science fiction. Speculative fiction is something where they've changed something very minor. Something they've either added something to the world that is a piece of technology or a technique, but it makes some major changes. Black Mirror is really well known for doing the speculative fiction. If you could do this, how would this play out? Is kind of how Black Mirror has always approached things, beyond being a Twilight Zone type show. And now in Severance, the basic structure is these people who work in an office, and whatever they're doing, they're doing something on computers. They don't even know what they're doing. They kind of know what they have to do to the figures on the computers, but they don't know what that actually produces in real life. And they've been severed, which means that they have an implant in them that separates those from everything else in their life. So essentially, when they start working there, they're essentially born. Although they know how to walk and talk and function, but they don't have any memory of who they are or what goes on outside of work. And then when they leave the floor, they leave the severance field and they don't retain memories. And so then they show up again the next day. So first of all, that's a horrifying thing to think about. It's like the second you leave work, you're back at work the next day. And you might feel refreshed. You might feel the effects of having slept and having eaten or done whatever you do in your spare time. But you literally spend your entire life working, at least your entire conscious life. And there's the version of themselves in this workplace called innies, and then the rest of their lives, which is called outies. There's so much to unpack with this show because it transcends just what the story's about. I mean, the story's about this group of people who are working there and them wanting to learn more about what goes on outside. And there's a new person working there and she's not adjusting well and they can't find a way to communicate with anybody outside. And it's them trying to figure out a way to break free. And then, of course, you see some of their personal lives in real life and wonder if they're going to cross. And there is this one person who has left the company. And he's trying to warn people that there's bad things going on. So beyond just that story and that sort of suspense what-if story, there's just a fantastic level of nuance there. And it deals with everything from your sense of identity about who you are. And if you didn't have your memories, would you react differently? Are you the same person without these memories? And it contemplates sense of identity and sense of personal ownership. It also says a lot about people who try to compartmentalize things. There are some people who have their job and their job's their job and they never bring it home. But it's impossible to never bring it home because it will leak over unless there's that hard line there. These are people who you know who, like, at work, they're very different than they are when they're hanging out on their own and very different than they are in their home life. And it questions how you can do that and how you can do that effectively. It also has certain things to say about politics and religion, because all that these people know are these walls of their work. They don't know anything going on outside of what's going on. They're not allowed to watch the news. And they treat the people who run this company and who founded this company almost as religious deities, because that is the entirety of their life, regardless of what their beliefs are outside. It's also very strange. This is on Apple TV Plus, and Apple has been in the crosshairs before in being one of the big tech companies that collects too much information. And this is a series about tech companies overstepping their ethical bounds. And I think that's kind of fascinating to do, but I'll tell you, this show completely had me. I'm fortunate enough that I had the whole season to binge watch, and I binge watched the whole thing. I didn't care. I watched the whole thing. And I got to tell you, it's probably one of the best shows that's been put on Apple TV Plus since Ted Lasso started. I mean, a very different show, but it's an amazing series. It's absolutely worth watching. And there's so much you can take out of it that I could probably talk for hours on this show, but I can't because I don't want to spoil anything. I want stuff to be revealed as it is revealed over the next coming week. So, but absolutely, do not miss Severance. Between this and Ted Lasso, it's a reason to get Apple TV+. Severance totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This week's spotlight is on a new film on Shudder. It's called They Live in the Gray. A Child Protective Services employee who is grieving over the loss of her own son finds herself in charge of a potential abuse case that might have supernatural implications.
Do you have any idea what it's like to have no control over your entire life?
I do.
I got an 8-year-old girl. School wants us to look into it.
Are you here to take me away?
I'm here to help.
A scratch on my face.
You can tell me.
I didn't get it from a fall.
I see things that people aren't supposed to see.
How often do you see them?
All the time.
Horror movies in general tend to be shorter than science fiction movies or dramas. Science fiction movies tend to earn a longer running time. And part of that's because you have to do setup and you have to do background and you're building an entire world sometimes. But it's not uncommon to see a sci-fi movie clock in over 2 hours. It's actually kind of rare to see a horror movie clock in at more than 2 hours. And some earn it. That's not to say that you've never had a horror movie run long or anything like that. But generally, when I start a horror movie and it's got a running time north of 2 hours, I'm a little skeptical. And that's one of the first things that curled my lip on this movie is I started to watch this and it's like 2 hours and 10 minutes long. And I'm like, oh, really? It seems like it's like a ghost story. And it's a relatively simple story, too. I mean, it's about this woman. She's grieving. She sees all these spirits and apparitions, and she's dealing with the breakup with her husband because her son has died, and so they're, and then that's a devastating thing. It's her only child, and so that kind of ruined their marriage, and she's still dealing with the blowback and the grief from that, but it's no more than that. It is that very specific story, and then it's her working with this family who's got this daughter who's getting, or at least appears to be getting abused, and the school wants them to look into it. But those are two relatively simple stories. They're not terribly complex, and they don't require a huge swath of characters. This movie just takes its time. It's got some great ideas. It's got some great imagery, and there's some really excellent moments in there. There are some moments in there that are either shocking or exciting, and I give them a lot of credit. There's some really genuinely excellent stuff in this film, visually and story-wise. But it just takes forever. They breathe. And there's a difference between suspense and drudgery. And this one tends to lean into the drudgery a little bit too much, where they have long lingering shots that don't serve that immediate purpose. Whereas if you go back, and I was talking about Severance, there's one episode, I'm not going to tell you what it is, but it's an incredibly suspenseful episode hinged on the physical stamina of a fat guy. And it is so well done. It's got such suspense to it because you're just waiting for the tension to burst. This thing doesn't build tension. It just sort of wanders. And honestly, if they had cut a half hour to 45 minutes out of this movie, I think it would have had a really sizzling horror film. But otherwise, it just takes so long. And when it finally gets to the point, you realize you still have 45 minutes left. So I don't know. There's elements to it that I think are great, and I think this could have really been a decent movie had they edited it a little bit more. But they didn't, and it overstays its welcome, and once you feel that a movie overstays its welcome, it's very hard to recover from that. So I'm going to have to say that They Live in the Gray kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. Available new on Blu-ray and DVD, we have Eternals. And then in the vintage, there's Looper in 4K, The Howling in 4K, Kids in the Hall Brain Candy, and then Doctor Who Flux. And that's it. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Studio 666. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.